Hey, y'all. Welcome to Windshield Time. Thanks for tuning again. This is Day and Ari.
Hola.
Hello. Where we talk about Bitcoin and money and how it affects pretty much anything and everything that it can touch in your lives. In our lives personally, exactly. And so we're doing the remote studio, true remote studio action here. We got a couple of awesome guests here in downtown Detroit. And so just to kick it off.
What's the price of Bitcoin? Satoshi, yes, math time, exactly. Day.
Well, actually, now that I think about it, let's do that after the introduction. So this is the introduction.
Okay, after Dom?
Yeah, all exactly. Right. So right now, we'll go ahead and roll Dom.
Down today.
Yeah, I know. It's a pretty tough situation.
Well, then we can. So we're going to have a couple of guests. We're going to have Adam Zantarski and Mark Anstead.
Anstead.
Ah, yep. As our guest today from the Detroit blockchain community here.
What's the building or facility that we're in right
we're
now?
We're in Tech Town, Detroit.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, so thanks again to Dom at CoinMe for reading the disclosures and disclaimers, and we'll go ahead and roll him right now.
Hi, y'all. This is Dom from CoinMe, or you might know me from The Blockchain Minute, your daily show for the most important story on the blockchain. None of the statements or opinions expressed in this podcast by the guest or its host is to be taken as financial advice or a solicitation of any kind to participate in a conservative or risky or speculative financial instrument that may or may not require accredited investor status as defined by either the Security and Exchange Commission of the United States of America or independent thought and rational thinking from the laws of humanity. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge that the hosts, Ari and Day, and their guests are not financial advisors of any kind, but only humans and not sentient intergalactic alien life forms. All statements made in this podcast by any living or dead or unborn or zombie or robotic entity in the past, present, or future of the space-time continuum of this known universe are purely ironic or coincidental thoughts and opinions. Moments of sarcasm, sadness, education, glee, entertainment, or any other emotion that may be found in this podcast are fully your responsibility and reaction that may or may not be intended for the listener in any way, shape, or form. Mature adult discretion is strongly advised. Thank you for listening.
Awesome. Welcome back. Thank you, Dom, for the D&D, right? D&D.
Yep, standard disclosures, disclaimers.
And it's
appreciate
time
it.
For our daily or twice weekly Satoshi math time.
Yes, exactly. So right now, we had a $1,000 drop.
What?
In the price of Bitcoin from last night to
what?
Today. Yeah, I know. It was a bit of a shock. So we're at $10,846. So if you could pull out your calculator, Ari, for dividing the one USD fiat.
Yes, one divided by
0.00010846. And that gets you
9,219 Satoshis.
Yes, so one USD would get you 10,000 Satoshis, and that is the benchmark.
And because it's more than 10,000, you get less Satoshis. It's like pieces of a pie.
Exactly.
I'm getting this now, 2.5 months in. Hashtag Satoshi math.
This is part of our regular little segment that we do on the podcast. I'm going to let Ari do most of the chairing and hosting on this one, and I'll sprinkle in with maybe some jokes or commentary or questions every once in a while.
Okay.
And so take it away.
Thanks, Sprinkles.
Thank you.
All right. First up, Adam, thanks so much for taking the time to come out with us and meet up with us today, both of you. Tell me about yourself, Adam. How did you get into blockchain and Detroit and like give me the background?
Yeah, so I went to the University of Michigan. I'm a homegrown Michigander, good old corn-fed boy. Basically, after college, I always kind of knew I wanted to come to Detroit. It's one of the things I actually wrote about when I got into U of M. Saw kind of the revitalization starting back even when I was in high school. So I was always very interested in Detroit and just kind of itching to get out here. I didn't get into blockchain, though, until about 3 years after I moved here. I had a previous career in financial media. It didn't scare me, right? Because it's kind of similar to stocks and equities, at least on face value, right? Mm-hmm. So anyways, I ended up meeting some people in the community, started organizing some meetups, kind of like that typical like grassroots way, and then got involved more heavily in my first formal startup as an EOS block producer. Had a chance to meet some really great community members out there that got me into delegated proof of stake and the governance model and all that stuff. So that's how I really got into it.
Wow. So then back up to you were in the financial media industry before. So then did you go into like crypto trading? Was that like the segue or the gateway crypto thing for you, or what, give me more details on that?
It was more of actually consulting for a friend that I met. One of my neighbors actually messaged me on Facebook. I was leading up a very small like libertarian Detroit Facebook page, and he's like, hey, you run this page?
Oh.
Like, do you know about Bitcoin and all this stuff? Why don't you try and grow this? His name is Kennard Hockenhall. He's actually known as the godfather around here, I like to call him. Nice. But he's the one who started all of our Michigan blockchainers.
But he's not in town, so I've been trying to meet up with him.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure he kind of directed you over here, but you know, he's kind of the guy who started a lot of the movements around here. So
you've already touched on two areas that are really big in the space, which is people coming from like legacy finance world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we were getting to know you earlier, and you have a finance or business background from schooling at mm-hmm. University of Michigan. And so you got finance under your belt, and then you got the libertarian side. And a lot of people, I think, got turned on to Bitcoin in the early days because of being a libertarian.
And you mentioned mm-hmm. not while we were recording, but your interest in libertarianism was because of Austrian economics, right? Or
yep. So learned about Austrian economics at school. That got me more interested in libertarianism because more about looking at things like the gold standard currency that actually is tied to some sort of store of value, right? And then eventually I got involved in kind of party politics around here for a little bit, and then made my way into blockchain. So it's kind of a very weird.
Wait. I just have one more question. So like before we go further down the blockchain path, rewind. Yeah. Adam's family. So like, is your family libertarian? Do you talk about economics and finance at home? Like, how did you get into this? The person you are today.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that my family is very libertarian. I'd say that they're more of the traditional kind of conservative for the most part, especially the older folks, right? But my dad was actually, you know, he's more conservative, but he's very just trustful of politicians in general. So that also is a good, you know, kind of bed to grow into a libertarian in when mm-hmm. you don't trust politicians in general.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that kind of leads into, you know, hey, maybe we should look at some of these federal programs and how they're not really working for, one, they're not working at all, and two, they're not working for the people that they're mm-hmm. supposed to help, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would attribute that kind of to the biggest part of, you know, looking into it and giving me that kind of foundation for being a libertarian.
Sorry, my phone just
devices on stun, please.
Womp, womp.
Yes.
Well, okay. Sorry about that. The words that you said about federal programs that are supposed to help the people aren't helping the people. So that was like ringing in my head as you were talking. I'm like, huh. So do you have like firsthand experience and seeing that or experiencing that, or you just go ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, look at places like Detroit, right? Lots of really, really great people, really resilient people here that have gone through a ton over the last, you know, 70 to 80 years, right?
Boom and bust. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
you know, the phrase is like Detroit is like the third world city in the U.S. apparently.
First third world city?
Yeah, the first third world city in the U.S. Just because there's the you know, the economic boom from the automobiles, and I think there was a lot of economic activity from wartime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
And then all that basically just
soup
went away. Yeah.
Yeah, for various reasons, right? you know, one, it's the industry. Two, there's a lot of things going on in government at the time, like redlining and whatnot, right? So really, you know, whether it doesn't matter, you know, necessarily what party's in power, right? It always seems like somebody's getting taken advantage of, or somebody's always having the force of government used against them. And if you look at things like, even going as far as to why the blockchain like EOS attracted me personally, is because of the way that a lot of their founders and especially Dan Larimer look at like, the role of government and the role of money not being used as a way, to commit violence against other people and manipulated to commit violence against other people. So.
I'm trying to figure out how to get to Tech Town.
Yeah, no, we started out like really, really deep, like going right into it.
So background you did.
Yeah.
And then, so we have a pretty decent idea of who Adam is.
Whoa.
And so now we can say, another piece of background is the fact that, objectively speaking, you're young. Like you and I were talking, and I started working in the mid-90s at the birth of the commercial public internet.
He's super Gen X, by the way.
super Gen X. And then now...
I hope I am. I'm right smack dab in the middle. I'm borderline millennial, borderline Gen X, more millennial.
And so with Adam getting out of school recently, you know, a handful of years ago, literally, is working at the birth of a new industry sector, which is blockchain, crypto, and Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin's 10 years old, but still is just now getting its footing.
Right.
And so, guys like him, I see the parallel or the rhyming of history of, you know, guys like me who were there at the first of the, you know, public internet. Now it's like the first of Bitcoin and blockchain and crypto really taking hold. So, fast forward.
You were like AOL and pre-ICQ and pre-Friendster. Yeah, MySpace. Yeah,
no, that's before
even
MySpace.
Before that stuff.
Yeah. No, this is so the joke about like Facebook Libra, and you guys probably saw a bunch of the news on it. But you know, it's like, would I want? You know, back in the day, people made conscious choices if they were aware enough to say, no, I don't want to be on AOL. Why would I want to be on AOL when I can be on the real internet? And so with Facebook, it's like, well, why would I want to be on Libra when I can be on Bitcoin? You know, why would I want to be in a cage space versus the real, you know, real internet?
That's really good.
The real Bitcoin. Yeah. And so now, you know, coming back again, you know, these guys are at the birth of a brand new industry here. So
maybe you can bring it to Detroit.
What do you, so what, Adam, like, what are you doing these days? And what are your, I guess, maybe top or top two, top three kind of like, workings on these days?
So I think the first would be the Detroit Blockchain Center. That's making a lot of progress right now. In February, and Mark was actually a part of this as well, we had the inaugural 2019 Detroit Blockchain Pitch Fest. So we had 250 people come to it, actually, which was amazing. It was pretty packed. Wasn't expecting that kind of turnout. So if we're going into our community a little bit, like, you know, our community is like very, very healthy, and you wouldn't think it would be like a place for blockchain. But it's just crazy how tight knit the community is and how we all support each other. So spending a lot of time on that, we're actually in Tech Town right now because, this hasn't been released yet, but you're more than welcome to kind of have it on the podcast. Hopefully I don't get in trouble, but,
it's only our parents who listen to this podcast, so it's okay.
We're going to be splitting a space with the Detroit FinTech Bay, which is another kind of FinTech accelerator type program up on the third floor here. So they're one of our really, really supportive partners as well. They helped us get the Pitch Fest off the ground. So we're going to be doing that. And then we're looking at launching an accelerator program in the beginning of 2020 through the DVC. So lots of really exciting stuff there that I'm happy about. And of course, you know, EOS Detroit being an entrepreneur, I'm sure you guys can relate to that. You kind of are always thinking about your baby at night. So,
Tell me about your baby, EOS Detroit.
Yeah, so EOS Detroit's an EOS.io block producer. So we're currently a standby right now, a paid standby right now on the EOS mainnet, but we also support Telos, Warbly, Wax, and I believe a few others that are more on kind of the the DL phase, just kind of testing things out. But so we support those in a variety of ways. Obviously, you know, our community building efforts roll into that, because for most EOS chains, you actually have to get voted in by the token holders.
Right.
It's more of kind of supposed to be a meritocracy. It doesn't always work out that way, but, you know, we're still working out the kinks, right? It's one of the reasons why I'm excited about it, actually, is because we have that governance system in place that mm-hmm. seems to be slowly working itself out. So on top of being a block producer, we're also working on our own internal product called Meringue. That's the code name for it. Okay. And that's actually a software as a service platform for dynamic equity tracking and profit sharing. We actually tested this with the launch at Telos when we were doing that as like an airdrop release. So all of kind of the community members and block producers that helped launch that chain, that's like how we kept track of the founders' grants. So it was awesome. Rewarded more based on your actual pre-launch contributions rather than just being like, oh, we're the team on the website, give us money, right? And it was an airdrop anyway, so it wasn't even an ICO.
Oh, good. I love airdrops, share drops.
Yeah, share drops. Yep. No, it's. I think it's definitely kind of more of where things should go in the future.
Yes.
You know, you shouldn't be asking people for money for nothing.
Right.
So, like a lot of ICOs have done in the past. But
I think Ethereum Classic was actually a share drop.
Yeah.
So are you. Oh.
Yep. So, yeah, no. So, I mean, I think that kind of concept's making it way throughout all
Thank
the blockchains,
you.
Which is
awesome.
Awesome. So. But yeah.
Yeah, actually, when I did an ICO back in 2017, and we were talking to Charles Hoskinson as one of our advisors, and he's like, you should really, really consider looking at the share drop. It's actually a much better model than an ICO. You don't have to deal with any of the regulatory issues. You don't run into any of the conflicts of interest. And, you know, if you look at Ethereum Classic as a example, you know, people are pro or against Ethereum Classic. That aside, it actually has, you know, gone up in value, and you can reap the benefits of that value as you continue to build. So we didn't do that, but yeah, mm-hmm. I really liked the idea when I first learned about it. So you are
good segue
to Hydro and Mark. Yeah. So Mark, hi, thanks for joining us.
I'm really happy to be here. I actually found out that you guys were in the area, I guess, just at some point yesterday. We're like, hey, we'd love to have some people from Detroit to come in. And I was like, well, I just got a little bit of things to get done, and I'll try and make it down here. So here I am. So really happy to be here and to come and chat. And hopefully you guys can learn a little bit about who I am, what I'm doing in this space, and educate about what blockchain is and maybe some of the things that we're doing.
Yeah. So tell me about yourself, Mark. Are you Michigan? Is that how you say it?
Michigander.
Michigander?
I think that's the term.
Yeah, Michigander.
So I'm actually not from Michigan.
Oh.
I'm originally from right outside Washington, D.C. In Maryland. I went and got my undergrad in Michigan at University of Detroit Mercy. And realistically, I came there mostly for lacrosse. I was a Division I athlete.
Wow.
And
nice.
I went there for lacrosse and for the business school. So I have obviously a background in business and finance. So obviously I found blockchain and crypto extremely interesting.
What was the true inception point of you getting truly into Bitcoin, blockchain, crypto?
What led you down the rabbit hole?
Yeah. So, well, there was I guess there's two parts to the story.
Okay.
The first part was in 2014, I bought my first Bitcoin. So it was like my little
nice.
Inaugural moment.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then my fresh.
But what led you to do that though? Why did you do that?
I probably shouldn't say that on out loud or in public, at least if it's being recorded.
Nice.
And I actually ended up selling that my freshman year of college. So 1 year later, I guess, at the end of 2014 and the beginning of 2015, I sold all the Bitcoin that I had because I was like, oh, I'm in college now. I want to go out and have a good time. So I sold all of that. A little bit disappointing, but and then in the junior year of when I was in college, I had some really, really unfortunate things happen to me. I almost died. Ooh. I was bedridden for months, and actually had to leave school for about a year and a half. Whoa. And me having a lot of interest in finance, and obviously had a little bit of previous experience with Bitcoin, I actually wanted to figure out what the hell Bitcoin was.
Oh.
So when I first got it, I had no clue what it was. I just knew you could go and use it to send money to people. And so being like I was day trading stocks and doing a lot of swing trading previously, I was like, let's start to look into Bitcoin and figure out what Satoshi Nakamoto was doing. So I went through, I read the Bitcoin white paper. Obviously, I was extremely interested. And then I started to read about Ethereum and what they are doing with logic and smart contracts. And I just became really, really passionate about what this whole industry is doing for bringing about financial inclusion. Because me having a little bit of background in finance, I was like, wow, this is really, really cool. And obviously, me coming into the Detroit area, I know that there is a lot of issues, not only in Detroit, but in the U.S. as a whole. There are a lot of people who don't have a lot of access to different types of financial services.
Unbanked, classically speaking.
I wouldn't consider people in the U.S. to be unbanked. I would consider them to be underbanked. So I believe it's somewhere between 20 and 25% of all the people in the U.S. Are underbanked. Really? I would consider a fair portion of them to possibly be unbanked completely.
Sure.
Define underbanked. You mean like I have a bank account, but I'm always like at the minimum? Or
so underbanked, you can consider people that have to go and get different types of cash loans and things like that. So you can see all of the pawn shops all across Detroit. So people are going and they're able to get money in different forms and fashions, which is you're able to do that in many different parts of the world. And you still can get access to banking solutions in the U.S., but it can be very difficult. And especially in different developing countries around the world, they don't even give you access to give you like an identity. So, for example, if you're in different parts of Southeast Asia and various parts of Africa, the government can actually go and completely take away all of your property, because you don't have any property rights on paper. So when you're going and let's say you're buying a business, there is no trail of the purchase of that business, and there's no paperwork to verify that you actually own that business. So these types of things are there's this huge industry that can be impacted by all of these different types of things. And obviously, that is sort of what sparked my interest for this industry. So I have really dove into what is now called DeFi, also known as decentralized finance, and self-sovereign identity. That is really my true passion for what blockchain can bring. And I'm trying to sort of be an advocate and evangelist for how people can utilize that type of solution and technology anywhere around the world, whether it's through Bitcoin or any of the other types of cryptocurrencies, whether it's EOS, Ethereum, or what we're building.
True. Yeah, and actually, to get to mass adoption, we actually need the self-sovereign identity and identity world figured out. And I think technically, we're getting there. You were going to say something, otherwise I was going to leave Hydro.
You identified two of the major parts of poverty, which is not being able to have land rights when maybe you did own it and then it just gets taken away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Massive problem in most of the world. And the other is identity. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So Microsoft, you probably saw the announcement, they're going to put identities on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, yeah, which is, our backyard. But you know, solving the immutability of identity and property ownership, massive, massive problems when it comes to, you know, just solving the issue of poverty in the world.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's really interesting to see how, because we're actually building out a lot of different types of things for self-sovereign identity. We built out...
Hydro. Okay.
Sorry.
Back up.
Our team at Hydro, we actually built out the new identity standard for Ethereum. It's called the... There's an EIP on the Ethereum GitHub.
Nice. Uh-huh.
It's called the ERC 1484. And what it essentially is, it enables you to have an interoperable identity or an interoperable digital identity. So in previous, I guess, iterations or applications that you are interacting with on a decentralized manner, you have to create essentially a new digital identity for every single application or web page that you're interacting with. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're interacting with a dApp. So like a decentralized application is like the new like big term in crypto and blockchain and Bitcoin. And when you go and you interact with a dApp, you have to go and be onboarded onto every single application. And you have to generate an entirely new address for each application that you're using. And so what this identity is able to do is interact with all of these different types of applications and have this one core identity, and even can store a balance of what you have in your wallet that can interact with all of these different types of solutions. Mm. And you don't even need to use a Web3 browser for some of these things if you're dealing with them like on a web page. And so that's sort of what we're building out. So we can have different types of identity-driven payment applications or just identity-driven apps in general.
So it's like layer or like protocol?
So
it's like service.
So we have the identity layer.
Okay.
And so that's just a regular non-fungible, non-tradable token.
Okay.
So you can think of some of the, I guess, well-known token standards that you have probably heard of are like ERC-20. Mm-hmm. So everyone knows like when there is like an Ethereum token, like we have our own, the Hydro token. Everyone typically has like their own like ERC-20 token, and that is a tradable token.
Right.
There's also the ERC-721, which for all of you video gamers who are listening, me being one of them, that is a non-fungible tradable token. So it's a token that is attached to like a digital good. So it's like a sword, a helmet, or something along those lines that you can interact with in a game.
Mm-hmm.
And the ERC-1484 mm-hmm. is a non-fungible, non-tradable identity token. So that's something that you can't trade with other people because it literally is your identity. And it's not something that you can touch. So it's just out there on the digital web. So you can think of it sort of like a username or something like that. It's a completely anonymous identification that you can attach different types of data or identities to mm-hmm. give that, information without having it to be anonymous. And on top of that, we have a protocol layer that enables you to build different types of identity-driven applications, mm-hmm. whether it's for payments, healthcare, fintech, and different types of things like that. So that's essentially the core of everything that we are building.
Mm-hmm.
We realize that there is this massive need for identity with pretty much every single type of product and solution out there, especially in the blockchain industry. Mm-hmm. And I guess we're hoping and looking forward to seeing that be used more in decentralized finance.
So I have a quick question.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I'm really, really dumb, uneducated.
So am I.
When it comes to the identity on blockchains. If you could give me the most fundamental way in which a person interacts with their, like you said, it's mm-hmm. like completely untradeable, non-fungible, everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is it basically, me taking an educated guess, is it a private key that someone holds that they enter into, you know, whatever computer or mobile device that they're on that proves that they are that person?
So the way that it works is, for example, so the protocol that we have is called Snowflake, and that is how you are able to mint your digital identity. You can call it like your Snowflake ID or Hydro ID, whatever
that's catchy.
You want.
I like that.
I know. It's like every snowflake is
everybody's a snowflake.
That's really cute.
I don't remember who came up with that, but whoever it was
pretty
clever.
Give them a raise.
yeah, exactly.
And so the way that that works is when you're going, you're minting this this digital ID, you are essentially creating your own wallet. But it's not a wallet that you can go and search for example, on like a Bitcoin Explorer or Etherscan. We're actually looking to build out our own sort of explorer for transactions between different types of digital identities. And so the way that it works is you're going and you're creating this digital identity, and you have a private key for that digital identity. And when you're going and you're interacting with different types of applications, you can onboard that digital identity, and your entire balance and everything that you already have in your digital identity is instantly onboarded. So all of that data, all of that information that you already have is directly onboarded into that product or that app. So you can think of a centralized solution version of this. Lo and behold, I hate them, but Facebook. and then obviously you can also think of LinkedIn as a centralized identity. So right. When you're going and you're interacting, let's say you're going on like a dating website, mm-hmm. me being like a 20-something year old, a lot of the people my age are going around and they go on different types of dating websites and they're like, I don't want to create a whole new account. So it'll give you the option to go and log in with Facebook. So what you can do in a decentralized manner is you can go and obviously if you want to go and create a new ID every single time you're going and interacting with an app, you can go and do that. But obviously it's going to be a pain in the butt. Instead, you can go and you can onboard all of your data, your information, and even your balance for like how much money you have that's attached to that ID, and it will automatically be onboarded into that product.
Very cool.
Is this different than Civic?
Sort of. So Civic sort of compares us as a competition to them, mm-hmm. Mostly because we are very low-level infrastructure. So we enable for KYC. And we can enable for KYC to be done with essentially any type of KYC provider. We are not a KYC provider. So we're enabling for applications to be built out on different types of verticals to enable, obviously, for KYC or just for different types of identity-centric applications. So you can have an application that deals with P2P, B2C, B2B payments, or mm-hmm. even credit, lending, all of these different types of things that are all based back onto your identity. Mm. And it can even be an anonymous identity. So that's sort of the difference. So we're building all of the low-level infrastructure that can be built out onto different types of verticals. And so we're at the point in terms of development where we have finished building out the majority of all of the different types of protocols at the protocol layer, where we're now building out different types of flagship products so people can actually use these types of solutions and different types of organizations are able to realize, wow, this is actually like a really cool use case for DeFi or to enable people to do different types of interactions using blockchain.
That's really cool. I'm going to check out Hydro more.
Well, so what is your role at Hydro?
So I am the head of business development, and I also manage all of the salespeople. I do.
How big is the team? you said all the salespeople. What? Yeah.
So we have probably 20. I think we have like 21 people on the team.
Whoa.
Did you guys do an ICO?
No. We're completely
funded.
We are completely self-funded.
Whoa.
Sort of what we were talking about a little bit before, we did an airdrop to verified developers. So if you actually go and you look at how people do airdrops, you have to be very careful because some of them can actually be seen as dividends.
Yep.
So I don't want to sort of point any fingers at any projects, but if you go and you do an airdrop to all of the token holders on a specific chain, that can be considered a dividend or a security for airdrop purposes.
So there's a way to do it right.
So, yes. So we had to essentially go and verify all of these people using a GitHub API, and we were then able to distribute, I believe it was like 25 or 30% of all of the supply to all of those verified developers. And
that was an ERC-20.
Yes, it's an ERC-20. Don't really plan to move from Ethereum. I know I always go back and forth with all of the EOS Detroit guys because they run obviously with EOS and we operate with Ethereum. So I always love going back and forth with them.
It's a healthy competition.
Oh, competition.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, we support each other.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm personally blockchain agnostic, so I love having all of these different types of conversations, and because we don't really know, I guess in 5-10 years from now, who is going to, I guess, be the big dog, like where all of the developers are going to be operating, and what network is going to be, I guess, really kicking it, and where everyone is looking like, all right, like these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah. I was just going to add to that. I think that we're finally kind of exiting the phase of kind of tribalism between chains. I've noticed like people are getting very, very sick of it online, and it's just like, all right, they all kind of have their problems right now. Like, let's all figure it out and support each other, because the community as a whole, we're going up against a lot bigger beasts than one another, right? So I think also what's going to make it really interesting, too, is IBC being developed here in the next couple of years. I know there's a lot of people working on inter-blockchain connectivity, right?
And interoperability.
So that's going to kind of open everything up, and I think definitely make that kind of, oh, is it on Ethereum? Is it on EOS? Is it on, you know, it's not going to matter as much, I don't think.
Yep, totally.
I know there's actually some projects that are already starting to do that, because I obviously, like, the main amount of time that I focus on is with Hydro, but obviously me being like just a blockchain enthusiast and crypto enthusiast, I go and do a lot of research on my own. I know that some of the projects that are working on, I guess, interoperability between chains, I guess, so they can go and work with any type of organization and deploy a software or a different type of product on whichever chain that they want. I know Quant has been doing a very good job in building out Overledger. Mm-hmm. And then I know Ren has been getting a lot of, they've been getting a lot of exposure recently with what they've been doing with Dark Pools. I think they have been blowing up in like the last like month or so. Whoever is holding Ren, good for you. I'm not one of them, but I've been really interested in what they've been doing with interoperability,
because
that's sort of one of the things that we want to work together and collaborate on. Because right now, with Hydra, we enable for an interoperable identity currently with Ethereum. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to have interoperable identities among any type of chain, whether it's EOS, Ethereum, Bitcoin, or even Hyperledger. Mm-hmm. And the idea for that is for any type of application or any type of product that you're utilizing, you can be onboarded instantly and maintain all of your private information. And that's massive. So will that end up happening? I don't know.
Right.
Will Ethereum build out Ethereum 2.0? I don't know. Who knows? But I guess we're all here to sort of figure it out and build out all of this infrastructure and create adoption, because that's sort of what we're here for. We're all, I guess,
pioneers.
We're pioneers and striving for the same goals.
That's awesome. Thank you. Can I ask one quick final question? So, like, to both of you sitting here, what do you want for Detroit blockchain, like the community here? What's the one wish you would want for the next 6 months, since we have 2019? By the end of this year, what would you like to see happen here?
You want me to jump in?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. Well, I think it would be really cool. Me not being like, I'm not typically like an EOS fan, but I love seeing, exposure to the Detroit community. So I personally would love to see EOS Detroit become a main chain block producer. Awesome. For EOS.io. Like that would be really, really incredible for you guys, just on a worldwide scale. It would also be awesome to get more events going on and really bring together all of the people in this community. Because I always love going to different types of meetups and just kind of shooting the shit with people and, mm-hmm. and talking about this stuff. It's a lot of fun. I think those are some of the things that I think are most important. And really just going to, for me personally, like I want to try and go to like different events and, try and educate people who aren't necessarily focused on blockchain and crypto and potentially try and educate them about what this all is, because most people are like, I've heard of it, but I don't really know what it is.
Well, there's education and then there's a lot of re-education because people have been miseducated through the media of what this stuff is. And it's really scary, right? Even the policymakers, especially. Yeah,
that's another conversation.
that's what I'm working on.
Yeah, so I don't know if your grandparents are still around, but just to speak to that, I've been doing this for 2 years, right? And my grandpa, like about a month ago, just walked up to me. He's like, "So have you heard anything about this funny money stuff?" And I'm just like, "Grandpa, I've been coming over like monthly talking about this, and you're just now, you know, like, oh dang." It's like, "Grandma, this is what I've been working in for the last 2 years, you know." So it's just like, it takes like that much time for somebody who's not technically savvy to even just like understand just like the very base level of it. So but to your question though, what I look forward to in the next 6 months, to point to something that you said, and I'll tease it a little bit here. We're looking at doing a large scale like expo style blockchain conference. Ooh, in spring of 2020. So we're breaking all the news on Windshield time for Detroit. Woo-hoo! So hopefully a lot of people listen to this, but anyway, so yeah, that's what I really hope for the most too, is to see really everybody in Detroit come out of the woodwork for all the things that we have going on and just trying to support one another through our different projects, because I didn't even realize you guys were like, Hydra was that far along. Like, I know you pitched the Pitch Fest, but you guys have come such a long way even in the last like 6 months.
Which is that's an understatement.
You know, so awesome. we're building real things here, right? And it's so refreshing, and it makes me kind of feel really warm inside that we have real projects and we have real innovation happening in this city.
Great.
When it's been absent for so long.
Yeah, I have a lot of recommendations I can talk about afterwards on how to help Detroit level up.
Well, just do just it. To kind of just to kind of, I guess, put a wrapper on this last topic about what you guys want to see. I mean, Ari and I, we're still starting out, but we want to be able to in the grand scheme of things bring people together, and so
hashtag together we rise.
Together we rise, exactly. we have our own vested interests in seeing the Cascadia region, which is Portland, Seattle, and
Vancouver,
British Columbia, do well. We have our own big tech giants out there, and we feel like there's an opportunity for us to kind of leverage that and the talent that's out there. But the really important part about all this that I see is that, we just happen to be in the Detroit area, but
got really lucky. Thank you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got really lucky in being able to meet you guys. But I think the whole point is that this industry is so early. I mean, it is such early days right now that people who are self-motivated, people who have the right kind of backgrounds, whether it's libertarianism or whether it's financial background or whatever it is, a crazy uncle, which is what I am to my nieces, whatever your on ramp is, there's a way to build companies and build communities and bring people together and just kind of get them informed about what is happening in this evolution of finance and evolution of, you know, identity and all this stuff. Because there's, you know, we got a long ways to go, and there's no point in, you know, there's no point in being mean. So my, like, you know, my sign off line is be nice to each other out there. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. there's no point in being, I think, malicious and mean to people who are trying to do good work. You know, I think people are trying to, you know, earnestly, honestly do good work to mm-hmm. bring their own communities up. Right. It's right. about the, and that's the game theory is a big part of this whole, you know, evolution revolution is, you know, it's like helping yourself, but also helping others around you simultaneously.
Yep. You know? No point in being the, my mother always told me, it's great if you become the smartest, richest, you know, most amazing person in the world, but if everyone around you is suffering, life is no fun. So make sure you bring everyone along with you. Share your blessings. Share your talents.
Go and change the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then final wrap up. events or community kind of information that you wanted to maybe make known to people? Because I'm going to work on this
or
today.
Or reiterate.
What's that?
Or reiterate.
Oh, yeah, or repeat about what's happening so that final message.
I'll let you take over.
Well, we got some more short-term stuff, actually, besides the conference and the accelerator. Max Kaiser from RT is actually going to be in town.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
At the end of the week on Friday. I'm not going to be there either, actually. So I'm going to be
in. Stacey coming, too?
Yes, she's coming, too.
Tell
yeah.
Hi. So
I'm
tell him hi.
I'm sorry?
Tell Max Kaiser and Stacey Hubert hello.
Okay. Yeah, I will. Yeah, I mean, I'm planning to go.
You have to carry the torch,
you have
Mark.
To go.
So,
what's the date on that?
Friday, the 16th.
Oh, wow.
I know. It was on the meetup, and I was like, damn, we should have extended our trip.
And you guys are missing the Dream Cruise
Dream
in Detroit.
Cruise?
The auto Dream Cruise down Woodward with all the classic cars.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was driving down Woodward yesterday, coming home from somewhere. I think I was up in Troy, and I was driving back, and I was like, why the hell are there so many nice cars? And then I got home, and I saw this little flyer, and it was like, Dream Cruise this week. So I guess everyone's starting to get prepped for it. Everyone was like sitting outside on the street, looking at all the cars.
Yeah, no.
This Friday. That's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
this Friday. Awesome. Wanted to make sure, too, to give a shout-out to CryptoBlood. You asked me about podcasts earlier. He's another – he's a homegrown guy here in Detroit. He does a really good podcast on YouTube. He's co-hosting that and interviewing Max Kaiser, so check him out.
Oh, awesome.
And then the week after, we actually are doing a happy hour and Major League Baseball game with Crypto Cleveland. So some of the Crypto Cleveland people are coming up
nice.
On Wednesday next week.
Really?
And we're having a little party with Yodlee, InvestNet Yodlee. They're a big financial data company out in Chicago, and they got an incubator in San Fran.
Wow.
They're kind of one of our big sponsors at the Detroit Blockchain Center, and so they're throwing that party for us for everybody.
That's
too
awesome. Yeah. I want to stay.
I actually didn't know about that. I'll be
yeah there. So that one's on the meetup too, and apparently this one's not on the meetup yet, but the DBC like physical location's gonna be like officially open mid-September, so we're doing like a get together for that too, a little opening party with them and Flagstar yeah. Bank because they have a mortgage accelerator too in there.
Wow,
so
that's
awesome,
great.
Man.
Yeah, so if you make your way back out you know, mid-September, you should stop by.
I know, maybe we've got to make Detroit a regular visiting place for us. Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, so as far as like public personas, like Twitter profiles that you want to share,
if people want to follow you,
yeah.
Sure.
How do we connect?
Mine is the_shark_7. My
nice.
Nickname is Shark. Mark the Shark.
Mark nice. The Shark. All right.
I don't have a cool handle. I have probably the lamest handle on the planet, and it's literally just my name, Adam Zantarski, all smushed together.
Awesome.
So, hey, I mean, nobody can take my name now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Identity.
We'll make
very
sure we
cool.
Tag Touché. You and follow you, and let's keep up the stay in touch. If you guys are ever in the Pacific Northwest, or if there's anything we can do to help, definitely reach out. We're always happy to help.
All right, awesome.
Cool.
Well, I guess that wraps it up. And so again, thank you so much, guys, for being available last minute here. Really, really appreciate it. And so I'll sign off and say be nice to each other out there, y'all.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate ratings, reviews, and happy comments. And together we rise.
Bye-bye. 5 stars only.
Like, subscribe, comment.
There you go.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, y'all. It's Casey Kasem from American Top 40. And none of the statements or opinions expressed in this podcast by the guest or its host is to be taken as financial or legal or psychological or dietary advice or a solicitation of any kind to participate in a conservative or risky or speculative financial instrument that may or may not require accredited investor status as defined by the SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission of the United States of America, or independent thought and rational thinking from the laws of the American Top 40 Countdown. By listening, you acknowledge that the hosts, Ari and Day, and their guests are not financial advisors, but they are up 3 spots this week on the countdown. They're not even legal scholars of any kind. They're simply humans, not sentient intergalactic alien life forms. All statements made in this podcast by any living, dead, or unborn, or zombie, or robotic entity in the past, present, or future of the space-time continuum of the known universe, simply ironic. Kind of like Alanis Morissette, who's down 3 spots this week to number 16 on the countdown. Moments of sarcasm, sadness, education, glee, entertainment, or any other emotion found in this podcast are fully your responsibility and your reaction, kind of like after a long distance dedication. That may or may not be intended for the listener in any way, shape, or form. Mature adult discretion is strongly advised. Let's get this thing going. On with the countdown.
You'll lead.
Okay.
I'll and so that think. I'll pepper in with maybe some commentary or jokes or, you know, just questions here and there. Okay. But we'll try to keep it pretty tight.
Dad jokes are definitely advised.
Dad jokes? Oh, man. Holy cow. Okay, so could you do some ABCs for me?
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Perfect. Right here.
H
Y J.
All right, awesome. So yeah, just remember to, and I might kind of like cue you to like keep it close, you know. Yeah. But I think.